Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations, like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only six numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these six numbers, 785-833. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to episode 306. It is a fantastic episode with Brothers Osborne. They talk about it all. Radio success, ticket sales, TJ telling his story, John taking a break from music for mental health. Love these guys. Love this talk. Thought I'd be pretty good just because I know him. Ended up being great. I hope you guys get a lot from this. So that's coming up in a second. But as always, let us do the top five releases I am most excited about this week. Number five, Nico Moon released a new song called Small Town State of Mind.
Small Town State of Mind. Small town, state of mind. Small town, state of mind. Small town, state of mind. Good friends and a bottle of shine. Whenever you roll up, you're right on time. That's small town, state of mind. Small town, state of mind.
Charlie Worsham released his Sugar Cane EP. Here's a new song called Hang On to That.
Hang on to that. Right there. That's one of a kind.
Number three, Dustin Lynch. He did put out two new songs. One's called Not Every Cowboy. And here's a clip of one that he played on my Twitch show, On Time with Bobby Bones. It is Pasadena.
Leaving Pasadena, we took it slow until we could find out where it was going. We found just what we were needing right there in Pasadena.
Dan and Shay announced they're releasing a new album called Good Things, and today they also released the title track. Here is a clip of Dan and Shay, Good Things. And number one, I feel like I've been waiting my whole life for this. John Mayer recently released his new album, Sob Rock. It's his first new album in 4 years. And by the way, even those albums 4 years ago weren't real albums. There were just not that many songs, you know?
Yeah.
Here is a new song called Why You Know Love Me.
Why you know love me.
Those are the five releases I am most excited about this week. Music news, Luke Combs released a trilogy. It's a vinyl with Beautiful Crazy and Better Together as a side A, side B. There's a Charlie Daniels Duets, which is Charlie Daniels and Friends. It's a Walmart exclusive. It's got
Garth and Dolly and Paisley and Darius, Brooks and Dunn. So that's out too. Little Big Town's got music out. Sheryl Crow released Strong Enough featuring Lucius live from the theater at the Ace Hotel. Peloton apparently is the best paying music streaming service. We talk about later in the show, like how much are they making for Peloton, Brothers Osborne. I didn't know this when I knew that.
Yeah.
But who would have guessed it? The person that, I guess, the organization that pays the most is Peloton. They pay more per stream than any popular music service. Based on a 2019 report, Peloton pays around 3 cents per stream. So there you go. They made 3 cents from the time I heard it. I think I've heard them twice. They made 6 cents off that. Peloton's contribution to music isn't that much. It's kind of probably why they can do it. I mean, if they had a billion people riding bikes, but they'd be making more money too. So, but Peloton is, that's where it's at. And that's where I listen to my music all the time. When I go home, I just plug in my Peloton and put on a class and put my headphones on. Yeah, I don't really do the class. Vinyl's comeback is still going strong. Over 19 million vinyl albums were sold in the first 6 months of this year. People kind of expected that to go away. CMT is set to honor the late Charlie Pride with a primetime special next month. CMT Giants' Charlie Pride airs August 25th. So there's that. Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame Class of 2021 is announced. Toby Keith, Amy Grant, Red Akins, Buddy Cannon, and John Scott Sherrill all were announced to be in the Hall of Fame. Coldplay was inspired by cavemen and then wants to perform on the moon. You know, they have new music out. They want to play on the moon. But the problem is, you know, the moon's vacuum. Can't hear sound up there.
Nothing.
So some people would say they'd love to hear Coldplay on the moon. I do really like Coldplay, so. And Rihanna is renting out her Beverly Hills mansion for $80,000 a month. Holy moly. You can stay in it for $80,000 a month. $20,000 a week. That's $3,000 a day, basically.
It's a lot.
That is a lot. There you go. That's what's up. Brothers Osborne, that's next. Thank you, guys. In studio now with Brothers Osborne, which I was on my Peloton. I don't know if either one of you guys ride the Peloton at all. Do you even have one?
I bought one.
Okay. I don't.
And
have
it looks
one.
Great sitting in my house.
But you understand the concept of
I do,
it. You
yes,
get on,
yes.
There's people on. Sometimes yeah. You're live, sometimes you're not. And I'm on, and one of you guys' songs come on, and I'm riding along to it. Do you, like, what? How does that deal get worked out? Because they got in a lot of trouble for playing everybody's music, and now they can't play everybody's music. They can only play some.
We have no idea what's going on ever. Yeah. I mean, we don't know.
We're wonder about that, but it can't be like the most like extravagant amount of money.
No.
Would it just be probably the same as a stream? Like 0.00?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Like, okay, let's go after them so we can make $75. You know, like I'm just like, just use it. I don't know.
But it was a nice mix of music. It was like Drake, and you could tell the girl was like 19 and blonde and, you know, kind of bubbly. And she was like, I just love Brothers Osborne. I didn't believe her. Not that you guys aren't able to be loved,
no.
She was going one after the other. It was like, I'm a big Drake fan. Oh, this is Lil Baby. I just love Brothers Osborne.
Brothers
and I was like, does she really? Or is this just a good sounding song?
No, it's probably just a good sounding song.
But
it's good company, though. That's what our next album's going to be featuring Lil Baby.
He's
featured on every, I don't even know a Lil Baby song. I only know features with Lil Baby.
Yeah.
Lil Baby.
Well, there's Lil Baby, and then there's
Da Baby.
And don't get them confused.
I know.
Because if you do, that's insulting to both of them. So, Lil Baby and Dub Baby.
I just assumed to not say anyone's name ever.
Well, I don't even do it in person. I won't do it anymore. Meaning if I were to just have seen you around and I'm like, oh, I think I know that guy's name, but I'm not going to bet. I don't even know if I met him, but I'm not sure. Hey, man, good to see you again.
Yeah, what's up, buddy?
You can't go wrong with good to see you.
No.
You can't tell everyone our trade secrets here.
No, this is a Nashville trade secret that everyone knows about. In fact, the good to see you is the Nashville hello, because we meet a lot of people here. We see people every day. And, you know, especially when they're not in the right context, it takes your brain that compartmentalizes things a second to realize who they are. And I met Kenny Rogers, you know, RIP. I met Kenny Rogers a few years ago, and he did a good to see you to me. And I was like, that is amazing for a multitude of reasons. One, he did the Nashville hello, the good to see you. Two, he doesn't know if he's ever met me or not. So he said, good to see you. Three, I'm 1,000% sure I had never met Kenny Rogers. Like, that's awesome. And he was super cool.
I saw Mike Dungan, who's a big deal here in town.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I saw him at like a grocery store, and my mind just wouldn't put him in a grocery store, and I couldn't remember who it was. I've talked to him 1,000 times.
Oh,
I think he's been in here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I know him. If I were to see him at a show,
I would be like, Mike, what's up, buddy? Yeah. But because we were near carrots, I was like, can't compute.
I know.
Don't know who that is.
I can totally relate to that.
The environment's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Have you guys played yet? Have you guys done shows
We've
yet?
Done,
I've done some shows. Oh, we
seven shows, maybe?
Yeah. It was our third. We just finished like our third weekend out, and it's been a lot of fun. A couple of them have been festivals, which have been a lot of fun. And then we just recently, this past weekend, did some of our first like headline shows. And that's been really fun because we put a record out last year, and it's obviously awesome to get back in front of fans again, but it's also the first time that we've been able to perform our new music to anybody and just kind of see what they're responding to. And not to mention, we've had some more singles out since last time we toured. So being able to add those into the set, it's been a lot of fun. And this year I know some people wanted to like dial it back a little bit and kind of get some of their money back they lost through the pandemic. We did the opposite. We're like, let's lose more money. No, we really try to step our live show up this time around. We always do, but obviously as you grow, you can only grow as fast as your budget allows you to. But this time around, we were like, you know, I think we just really wanted to put on a show that just stood out from the rest, considering everyone is going back on tour right now. Yeah. So I feel really good about it. We've put a lot of work into it, but I'm excited for the fans, especially the fans that have seen us. It's, you know, dozen plus, you know, 50. Some of these people have seen so many shows. I'm like, how do you afford to do this?
I know. But, I know. I feel self-conscious. And there's someone, like there's a particular Katie who I know will be listening to this at some point. She has seen nearly 100 shows. And it makes you self-conscious. You're like, you've heard this same damn bit and routine 100 times. How can you find this interesting? I'm falling asleep up here. How can you find this interesting?
You know what's great about music? And there's, a lot of great things. But as opposed to what I do when I tour and I do stand-up, is that you guys can play It Ain't My Fault for 10 years.
Yeah.
If I work hard and I have a joke, and I've got four or five of them that I'll do a corporate gig still because they didn't ever come watch me tour. But if I write a joke or I have a whole bit that's like 3 or 4 minutes and I've cut it just right, dialed it, I got my everything's down.
Yeah.
I can do it once.
Yep, that's it. Right. That's all you get.
And I can never do it again.
It is. Although I have seen some comedians, and we've had some friends of ours who go out and do that, and they'll do like one kind of like, okay, there's all the new material. I'm going to do the greatest hit. Like, here's the one that really made me famous. And it still is funny when you
if
get to hear it.
If you address it as a greatest hit, nothing I've ever done has been great. So I'm like, what am I going to do? Here's the mediocre one that I worked on for 6 months. The only time I even covered a joke once. The first time that the Opry hadn't had a lot of comedians on for a long time after, because there was the whole 90s Foxworthy.
Oh, yeah.
We were just backstage there, and they just did like a whole reel of the comedians. And it was.
It's awesome, right?
Totally incredible. I'm like, where is that?
So
you're bringing it back.
So they had come to me, Sally Williams, who used to run the Opry, was like, hey, we really want to get back into comedy. And we know that, one, you're funny. Two, you can implement a little music. And three, you're clean. We don't have to worry about you because I love the Opry. My grandmother made me. I didn't at first. My grandmother made me when I was like 7. I was like, why am I watching this over?
Right.
But then I have a real affinity. I produce a TV show for the Opry now.
Oh, yeah.
And so the first time I got to go on and do comedy, I went up and I did my whole set, 11 minutes. You know, it's not like the Opry is a full half hour.
Yeah.
But
but 11 minutes, that's a long, that's a lot of content. Yeah.
I mean, I would normally do an hour, right, when I was doing theaters. But and it's also a weird crowd because they didn't come to see me. Some of them don't even know who I am.
Yes, they do.
And some of them are 90. They don't even know what I'm talking about.
It feels the same way. I mean, it feels the same way for us when we play there. I mean, I love playing it for a multitude of reasons, but it can be
the
a really
tough.
Hard crowd to play to.
And at the very end, it's the only time I've covered a joke. It was, I said, for all you guys out there, like, this is special for me because my whole life, I watched the Opry.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the Opry, depending on when it was on TV on, you know, TNN or.
Oh, yeah.
I said, and my grandmother, who is not alive anymore and adopted me for a long part of my life, I said, her favorite comedian was Jerry Clower. And we would watch Jerry Clower on the Opry. We'd watch him. And it seems like he was on every month.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did my favorite Jerry Clower joke. And I did it. And to me, even though I didn't write that joke, that's the best freaking joke I've ever told. Because it meant something to me.
To you, yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Well, you know what? It's especially when you're a new artist out and you go out and you start playing songs and you get like your first single. It's kind of doing something. And then you cover Hank Williams, and everyone goes bananas for it. You know, it's like, oh man.
Yeah, there's this great special called Talking Funny. It's like Louis C.K., Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, and Ricky Gervais. And Jerry Seinfeld said something that, for me, kind of resonated in a very strange way. You know, a musician will get up. We'll get up and play a song. Even if it's a new song, we have roughly 3 to 4, maybe 5 minutes. and we play the song, right? And then they decide whether it's cool or not. Whereas a musician, or sorry, a comedian, they're judged like every 10 to 15 seconds. So, and it can really go off the rails. So if we do a song that was like, wow, that wasn't really much. Well, let's just do It Ain't My Fault and we'll win them back. A comedian, they're literally judged. So it takes a lot of guts.
I never really thought about that. Yeah. And once, I feel like once a comedian loses the room, they very rarely get it back.
Unless, and I'll say this, because when I will do a theater, 15 to 2,000 people, right? Mm-hmm. And we're in a theater and they came to see me. And I know the first 10 minutes they're giving me for free because they're just happy to be there.
Yes.
I can go out and just be like, what's up, everybody?
Yeah.
They laugh.
Yeah.
Funny.
Oh, yeah.
There's always a mark between like 11 and 15 where you got to start to earn that ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I will really hit them with the hits, the moderately decent stuff, mm-hmm. around 11 to 15. And then I'll start to sprinkle in some new stuff. And when it doesn't work, I have the one crutch that some comedians don't, where I just grab my guitar and I play a funny, and you can hide behind a guitar.
Oh, yeah.
You literally can.
Story of my life.
I can play.
Literally.
You're
like, I do that frequently.
You're telling me.
I do want to talk about the genesis of the group, because you guys haven't ever done this podcast here before, but I do want to talk about the genesis, which I know, and obviously you guys know, but to a lot of my friends who love your music from kind of the outside edges, they're like, which one has the beard? Yeah. Which one doesn't? But you have the beard too, TJ.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it's very obvious which one they're referring to when they say beard. I like have a very, very tight beard situation, and John is so bearded that people just automatically think that I'm clean shaven.
Honest to God, if I were to close my eyes without looking at you and said who has the beard and who doesn't, I would have bet money you didn't have a beard.
People say the clean shaven one is what the one, and I'm like, I haven't shaved in like 8 years.
Honestly, you guys watch The Office at all?
Yeah,
they're debating if Stanley has a mustache.
Yeah. Yeah,
if totally. You would have done that with you and your beard, I would have said you didn't have a beard.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, comparatively speaking, though, if you were sitting next to Bobby, you would have a beard, but you're sitting next to me. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, his is tightly shaven. Mine's I got a loose beard.
Let's go back to the beginning of just you guys' childhood and when you started to play music. Because, John, you're older?
Correct.
How much older?
2.5 years.
Does that mean that you had 2.5 years of music before TJ ever started doing music?
Not really. Not really. You know, our parents played music, and it was just always around. And we both, I don't know, I think we both kind of got into it roughly at the same time.
Probably roughly, but, you know, I think, you know, really the thing that's kind of weird to think about, I was thinking about this the other day, someone asked about your parents, they play, and I was like, yeah, they do. And it made me think about really the first time that both John and I really wanted to learn how to play and learn how to contribute music to any degree was simply just so we could join the family, or mainly our dad and our uncle and our cousin who played just at the kitchen table. I was like, God, if I can, because they wouldn't let us just come there and bang on a guitar and make nonsense. They were like, if you learn how to play and you can come and play, then do that. So we were like, oh man, I can't wait to play at the kitchen table. That was like that was the mark. And then to really think about going this far, I mean, you kind of dream about that. I think every kid does, you know. But wow, I mean, it's been such a long way. But that was really kind of the first thing that lit the fire under us, was just simply so we could just kind of join the family around the kitchen table.
I remember when I just started playing guitar, and I started when I was around 12 or 13. And all I wanted to do was play around the table, like he said, with our dad, our uncle Bill, and our cousin Johnny, and they wouldn't let me because I had to practice. And they were right. They said that we want you to practice, and you can't just thumb around. You have to be good enough to play. And then that inspired me to actually want to be good enough to be able to play at the kitchen table with everybody. That's where it all started.
And another thing that was really cool in that moment is both, particularly our dad and our Uncle Bill, had originals that, you know, our Uncle Bill grew up in a band,
mm-hmm.
He was adopted at a young age, and we didn't get to, my dad didn't even know him till really later in life. And when they met each other, they were both musicians, and both wrote songs. And
bought the same guitar. They both had the same Ovation.
Quick sidebar, then, nature or nurture?
Yeah, who knows, man? I mean, it's a little bit of both, I'd imagine.
Really crazy, though. I mean, honestly, yeah, they had the exact same Ovation.
Mm-hmm.
And, which is like funny now, like no one has an Ovation anymore.
No.
But so that was the thing. They would sit around, they'd play, you know, they'd cover Bob Seger songs or it could be George Jones, and then they would throw in their originals. And I always thought, man, that's so cool, like to have these original songs. And they actually had some really good material. I mean, there's still songs to this day that I'm like, man, that'd be really cool.
So was it the brother? Can we open that door, Mike? It is pretty balls hot in here. Was it the thing where one brother picks up the guitar, but then you're stuck with the bass?
Not really.
Because that happens a lot in families where the older brother's playing the lead, and it's like, all right, Sammy, you got to play the bass.
Player.
Yeah, I think it was like, you know, well, John's playing guitar, and I'm like, I got a lot of work to do to get up there. You keep doing that. I'm not going to try to catch up to you.
We both played a lot when we were kids, and we both ended up playing the bass at the same time. I was the first, like, in our elementary school, Deal Elementary School, I was a member of the first Deal Elementary Symphony Orchestra, and it consisted of three violins. It was me, a girl named Emma Barrett, I think her name was. This is like 100 years ago. And Dustin Reed or something like that. And it was three kids. And I just watched a video of it like 6 months ago, and it sounded atrocious. Oh, it was so bad. You could tell we were really trying really hard.
You got earplugs upon entry.
Oh, my God, it's so bad. And then we both started playing the violin, and neither of us were very good. And the reason why we ended up on bass, because when we moved on to like middle school and the teacher saw that we were tall, basically we were just taller than all the kids, and our hands were too damn big for the violin, so he just put us on the bass. Yeah. Almost a similar thing of like, well,
they needed bass players.
Yeah, we need bass players.
different big brother.
Yeah, they're like, we don't need another crabby violinist. Like, please, just go over and play bass, will you?
And then our big hands, I was like, oh, this is cool, and it worked. And actually, side note, any musician that's listening will understand this, but a bass is tuned similar to a guitar. They're tuned in fourths, and a violin's in fifths. So it made sense, more sense to me.
So you're playing music in school, you're playing music around the table, but did you two ever, because I know you didn't move TJ, you didn't move with John to Nashville.
No.
Not at first, no. So that wasn't the plan for you guys when you're 16. We're going to be a duo, the greatest duo of all time.
Well, that was our mom's plan, probably. Yeah. No, she had a plan with our sister, Natalie. I believe you've met her. She's wonderful. I feel like she should run for mayor of Nashville because everyone knows her. Quite all the time, people are like, oh, wow, you're Natalie's brother. And I'm like, what do I have to do to get some recognition?
I'm on TV.
Here? Yeah, exactly. Anyhow, but so originally my mom, her plan was that it would be John and I and Natalie, and that I would get on the microphone. I would say, hey, I'm TJ Osborne.
And I would say, and I'm John Osborne.
And Natalie would say, I'm Natalie Osborne. And together in unison, we would say, and we are the siblings. That was my mom's grand plan. And so we were like, we're going to stay far away from that idea. And so John came down, was in a band called King Billy that had a lot of traction at the time, and a lot of amazing musicians and songs and in that band. And I was kind of doing my solo thing. We were in a family band with our dad called Deuce and a Quarter. In fact, I have a tattoo on my left arm that says 225. A lot of people want to know what it means. It's simply just a car, a Buick Electra 225. And so our family band was named after that. And
but
then,
you moved here first.
Yeah. I did, yeah.
How far ahead of TJ?
It was a little kind of staggered. So I went to Belmont, and I started in 2000. And then I want to say you came in around 2001 or 2, something like that.
Yeah,
and
I think it was something.
Yeah, like that. So you moved down here before you graduated high school. Ended up going to high school here for like a year or two. Moved back to Maryland to graduate. The funny part about
it took me 5 years. I know the math. I can see you over there, Bobby. You're like,
yeah. 5 years. Well, he loved high school so much, he stayed around for an extra year. And yeah,
exactly. The kicker there is I hated it so much that I wasn't that attentive. So then it added an extra year. So I really like showed myself there. Like, oh, wow, you hate this so much, you're getting an extra year of it.
It is backwards, isn't it? The more you love school, the less you have to do it. That doesn't make any sense.
That is true.
So the kind of side note, so when I was 18 when I moved here, TJ, so it was like 18 or 19, something like that, when I was at Belmont, TJ had come to live with our mom in Nashville for a short period of time. But I had a dorm room, like a triple at Belmont, which was like unheard of. And my two roommates like dropped out right before the semester started. And I had this huge room to myself. It was amazing. And TJ would come just like sleep, you know, in the dorm room. And if we would go to like a Belmont party, which at those days, you'd be lucky if there was like four people. And that was a Belmont party. And TJ, they all thought he went to school because you know he always had this ID voice. Like, yeah. I'm 14.
I was like 16. Everyone's like, what's your major? And I would just tell them music business because I know no more questions would follow that.
Like boring. And so he moved back, and I was still like, I changed my major a bunch of times. I actually started in bass. because I got a scholarship, and my parents were like, well, if you play bass, there's a lot more work for bass players. There's too many guitar players.
Yeah, which is another interesting side note there is John was an incredible upright bassist. I mean, he actually went to Belmont and won a bass scholarship.
You played the big, the boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, the big boom,
one.
Boom. Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing.
Like, you flip it and stuff?
No. Well,
he played like classically. Like, he played with the Baltimore, like the Baltimore Symphony, even. They would have this where they would get kind of the first top chair people in the state to come join them for some concerts, and John was, you know, it was one of the kids they picked out of high school to come up and play with the Baltimore Symphony playing upright bass.
Yeah,
it was incredible. Upright.
I was a total nerd, but that's what I did, and but I didn't love it, you know. So when I went to school, I was like, man, I'm not loving this thing. I really want to play guitar.
Kind of like you were talking about the Grand Ole Opry, and you were kind of made to watch it, and then it took you a minute to love it. That's how we were with bass.
And then eventually, I changed my major to guitar because I'm like, I really enjoy playing. This is where my heart is, and then I switched my major to music business, switched it back to guitar. I'm like, man, I'm like 4 years in. I've got like 500 hours or credits later. I there's no way I'm going to graduate. And I'm already like doing it. I'm getting calls to go play. I'm traveling, you know, 4 hours, making like $100 and being like, this is great. And so I bailed from school. But around that time, TJ came back after he graduated high school. And then that's when we both moved here. So he had mentioned this band, King Billy, that I was in. One of my best friends from college, Josh Matheny, who's, you know, played on like a bunch of hit records as of recent, he's a great dobro player. We joined a band. Charlie Worsham was in that band, and a bunch of other really, really great musicians. We ended up getting a publishing deal. TJ and I at the time had been writing a lot of songs off to the side. The King Billy, the band I was in, cut a few of those songs, so he got signed to the publishing deal to that same publishing company about a year or two later.
Quickly, what happened? Because now King Billy lives in like everyone's mind as one of the greatest bands that should have been massive because of the success of you,
just individually,
Charlie.
Yeah,
yes, and so everyone's like King. I saw them once. It was the summer. I mean, you're like, it's like this legacy.
It was an incredible band. I mean, I remember it was like, it was the show to go and see.
But what happened? Why did it not happen, I guess?
I don't know. I could try and give you 100 reasons as to why things do and don't happen in this industry, and I would probably be wrong every time. And so much of it is just being around the right people, the right time, the right songs. I mean, I listen to the songs. I'm like, yeah, they're really, really good songs, and some of them are really great, but maybe they just weren't, you know, I think we were pretty muso about things. Like, we're all, like, way too smart for our own good when it came to music.
Even the
then.
Term muso, I think, is probably over most people's heads.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, when you're so musical that it's just, like, only nerds would like it.
Yeah. It got there. And I don't know, man. I don't know. I wish I could give you an exact reason. Timing is everything, you know. I mean, Bobby, you know, you've seen amazing, and you are such a supporter of new music and new artists. You're very rare in that way. And you've seen it firsthand. Like, this is amazing. Like, I can't wait to see this thing blow up. And 2 years later, 5 years later, nothing happens. And no one knows.
But the one thing that is, like, really interesting now in retrospect is obviously everyone is like, how did this band not take off? And, you know, I think now, I think looking back for probably most of the people in the band, I mean, particularly us, it's like, well, this would have never happened. And certainly, sure. As you look back different, and at the time, I was doing solo stuff because John was in an established band in town, like, but really outside of the bands that were playing nationally and super famous, they were the biggest band in Nashville. And I just was like, you know, I need to do my own solo thing. John's, at the time, it was really well known as a great guitar player. And I didn't really want to kind of rest on his laurels or whatever, or write his coattails. So I wanted to just make a name for myself. And so I'd go out and perform. John, a lot of times, would join, play guitar. And people always commented on just the two of us together. There was something that we didn't really notice because we just played together our entire lives. It didn't feel necessarily that special to us. But people kept saying it over time and time again. Like, the two of you is something. You got to do something together. And then once we decided to do that, I mean, within a year, we were signed to Capitol Records.
I was watching Nathan's hot dog eating competition. Do you guys happen to see any of that at all? Any clips?
I don't, but I find it very fascinating.
So
yes.
Before the hot dog part, before Joey Chestnut eats 70 hot dogs.
Is this his name?
This is his name.
Great name.
Great name, yeah.
There's a competition.
That cannot be his real name.
They drink a gallon of lemonade, and it's who drinks the gallon of lemonade the fastest.
Before they eat the hot dogs.
Well, one guy did both competitions.
And
the guy who won the lemonade also didn't win the hot dog, but also drank the gallon of lemonade, won, then went and finished, you know, fourth, fifth.
He's a superhero.
My point is, and you're going to see.
And he probably weighs like 80 pounds. Those people somehow are like, what is going on?
Sorry. What I saw John just do with a bottle of water is what the guy did with the lemonade. Somehow he would you get John another bottle of water? It's like he took one. It's like he took it up, made one swallow, and the whole thing was gone.
I was wondering where the hell you were going with that.
Are you dehydrated, my friend?
I don't know. I just love water. This drives Lucy, my wife, Lucy Silvas, who you've played before. It drives her crazy about how much I love water because she hates water. I'm like, what is there to hate? It's amazing. Like, it's cold and it's dehydrating. And she's like, she sees how much I like water and she gets so annoyed. She thinks I'm doing it to just piss her off.
The one thing, though, is that Lucy doesn't drink much alcohol. So I think if she downed like 15 beers the night before.
Yeah, then she would know.
She would want to be chugging water.
Thank you. I'm just consistently hungover.
Well, I was listening to TJ tell his story about going solo, but over on the side, I was like 93% there. But in my part of me was going, that's the weirdest. That's like the most solid water drinking I've ever seen. It's like, oh.
I love it. Yeah. Anyway, I love it.
Let me talk this. And I've told this story with you guys around, but for anyone that's listening new to this, because this is a whole different podcast, it goes a lot of different places. The first time that I saw you guys, I had been dragged to what they call a radio show boot camp.
Yes.
And it wasn't about country music. Heck, I wasn't even in country music. I had built my own syndication company and I was doing pop and hip hop, but I was getting trouble because I would put Dirks on, I put Willie on. They'd be like, why are you playing country music on pop radio? Kind of what it happens now, just on the other side, where I'll bring in Pharrell or I'll bring in somebody and they're like, why are you bringing in Pharrell on a country? Mm-hmm. I just always knew what I liked. It didn't matter to me really what format it was.
I think most people are that way.
I think people are too, right? Mm-hmm. But I was over there doing that and we're in this theater and I was ready for some other, you know, jabroni to get up and talk about something in radio that I thought was lame. And they were like, all right, before we go, we got these two guys we want to showcase to you. I think it was Chicago.
It was in Chicago, yeah.
And they were like,
I'll never forget this. This is one of the most awkward moments in our life.
It was awful.
For both of us, guys.
Yeah, that's good
to
hear.
They were like, awful. Brothers Osborne. And I was like, music? Like, I'm trying to like.
And I also don't know if you recall this, but they said Brothers Osborne. And then the guy decides in that moment to change the batteries in the microphones. Oh, I'm like, why didn't you do this like 10 minutes ago, dude? Are you kidding me? So we had to stand there on stage while everyone finished clapping 5 minutes ago. And he's changing one by one these batteries. I was like, oh, my God, I could kick you straight off the stage right now. And we started performing and no one really cared. Can I say another thing, though, about that I found really bizarre about that?
Yeah,
since you worked in different like formats of radio, why are the pop radio people so insanely arrogant? Like, I feel like a lot of them
pop
have stations.
Pop artists are, too.
But I find, like, these people, you know, like, I feel like it's probably unusual in country. Like, you actually do know most, if not all, the country artists that come through here. But they always pretend like you'll listen to a pop station, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I was hanging with my boy Drake. And I'm like, I guarantee that you maybe just saw him in a meet and greet. And it's so weird, and they're, like, the most and at that thing, I found it almost like unbearable to watch these people coexist together, because you had the country people who were like really cool and hanging out, and some of them have their egos, and then all the pop people were like, screw the country guys. Even though I'm like, these guys have stations that are like five times the size of yours. I don't know why that happens, but it's weird.
Culture. The answer is culture.
Mm.
You are in the pop world taught to look as cool as you absolutely can, even if you don't have it.
Mm.
In the country world, and I find this with myself too, because I'm in California a lot working. In the country world or the Nashville world or the South or whatever you want to use, you know, we are taught, hey, even if you are cool, kind of scale it back a little bit because nobody gives a crap.
Nobody does. Right.
So it's basically that's the difference. Pop radio versus Los Angeles versus Nashville versus country radio.
Mm.
It's when I go and I'm shooting American Idol, they think that I am, first of all, showing up with a hazy, you know, overalls hazy.
Yeah, but they're
also like, he's just the greatest guy. He's just the... And it's like, I'm like everybody else here.
Mm.
You know, I don't get an award for being the greatest guy. I'm a good dude, but
everybody, you gotta be a good dude
around here or you don't survive.
Yeah,
I know. Isn't that weird when someone's
like, they'll prune the bad dudes here.
Oh, big time.
Real quick.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, he's just the greatest. Because there, if you don't show up with an entourage, even if you can't afford it, that's anti that culture that they promote. So that's a it was yeah. that's such and a wonderful here, observation so that you saw, because that's how it is.
Here, if you show up with an entourage, you everyone's laughing at you.
Like, yeah, they're
what
like,
are you
douche.
Doing?
Yeah. Boo. Everyone's like rolling their eyes. I mean, that's like in the same way that Vince Gill, arguably the greatest singer and songwriter musician of all time, of all genres, shows up by himself to like an event and wears his lanyard around his neck with his name on it just to make sure that everyone he can get backstage to a place he's playing. And then he's just cool, and then he packs up his own guitar and walks off and drives his own ass home. I'm like, wow, if he can do it, anyone can do it.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I saw Stapleton drive up to a show once in his old truck in Nashville, get out, be like, hey, I'm Chris. And they were like, oh, you are him. And they just like let him in. He just literally Stapleton drove his old truck, parked it behind the Ryman, and walked in the back just to do his show.
Yeah.
And I was like, but yes, it's a culture.
Yeah.
People in that pop culture have to act cooler than they are. People in this culture have to act less cool than
you,
they
and you really
think
see it too at the Grammy Awards. I feel like it's so funny. Once again, you'll see someone from country walk in and everyone's like, oh, this hokey, you know, SOB. Meanwhile, I'm like, this dude sells like 10 times the amount of tickets you do. Like,
yeah.
You're not that cool. Yeah. Like, just chill, you know, just have fun. Why is it such a, you know, it's weird that they're like, oh, wow, they're so nice. I'm like, Shouldn't you just be that way? Nice?
And I felt that way too early, but now I just take it. I'm like, I'm the nicest guy in Hollywood. Here I am. Because
I a weirdo.
I would go to meetings where, and I didn't realize that it was so counter that culture, but I would go to meetings and pitch TV shows, not for me, because I produced a couple shows. And I would go and I'd be like, I met with Les before I got in trouble. I went and met with Les Moonves, who was the president of CBS and all of his people. And I showed up by myself at the gate and I just, you know, took an Uber, got out, and they were like, you're here by yourself? Are we waiting for your team? I was like, I'm the team.
It's not that hard.
And they were just so shocked by it. And they said, they verbally said, this never happens. Nobody comes alone. This is so refreshing. And I went, oh, I will now do this forever.
Yeah.
So when I go, and that's what I would have done anyway, I go by myself.
Right.
And I show, I get my little backpack on, and I'm like, hello, hey guys.
Yeah.
But they're like, you're the nicest guy in Hollywood. And I'm like, I'm not from Hollywood. So, but it is. It's definitely a culture thing. But you guys grew up, where you grew up in Maryland, I have to think felt like the South.
Compared to?
Well, it's
compared
weird.
To compared New York and to Boston York and a place where I go when
Philly,
I'm in the Northeast. Yes.
100%.
Well, I think it's interesting, and I think it's probably a lot of why our music is the way that it is it's like to the Northerners, we are just like these rednecks down where we're from. And then people from the South treat us like we're these Yankees. And it's kind of like we're in kind of everything. No one really wants to claim us. I'm not really sure what's going on, but it is a very like homogenous thing where we do feel part Northeast and part Southern. It's really, really strange.
That's funny you say no one wants to claim you, because I felt for a while, because, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, I have been fans of you guys since the first time I heard you. I was just like, love you guys. And yeah. I would tell you guys that, and I'd bring you on the show, and you play early stuff. And
you've been very supportive.
And this isn't me, I don't want to hurt my elbow, pat myself on the back. But my point is that I felt like even the format, country music did that to you for a minute too. Not geographically.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, they're like, they're a little too rock. And then I'll be like, no, they're a little too country. Mm-hmm. Where you kind of were in that same spot where no one wanted to claim you exactly. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Still do.
Still do. Yeah.
Still
but
do.
But I think, you know, the thing is that we've realized, I think there's a lot of fans out there who are the same for whatever reason. And it's actually been, now that we are where we are, I think we've done really well touring because of that, and we've been able to make a lot happen off of comparatively not a ton of radio success. And I think obviously to a new artist, we have had a decent amount of radio success, but we've gotten a lot done with not much. And and to come full circle though, you mentioned something, and we were kind of heading there with your story, talking about that radio seminar thing that was extremely bizarre. And I've told you this before. But we just got to meet you. I think you were new to country, so everyone was like, I don't know about this guy. You know, he's like fresh blood. Everyone's like, and you're immediately coming into like one of the biggest like slots in radio. But you sat there through the entirety of our performance.
You did.
Most people could care less that we were playing. There was very few people in the room that paid attention. And I will always remember that you were attentive to the entire thing. Whether it was because you felt incredibly sorry for us, I'm not really sure. That probably has a lot to do with it. But thanks, Bobby. Thank you.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for four lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with four lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You talk about, it's, you know, when you say we haven't had, as compared to new artists, a lot of radio success, it's funny because there are some songs that will hit number four but feel like a number one.
Yeah.
With some artists, right? Not even talking about you guys specifically, but Urban will come in and I think like Gonna Fly or something was never a number one. Or he's like, you know, but it feels like a number one because people remember. I feel like, because I had to look at like the chart to see where you, I feel like you guys get more credit for having radio success because it feels like a lot of your songs were bigger than maybe numerically they were given.
I know, it's really
strange. Does that
make sense?
Oh, 100%,
and
yeah.
You are right that way. There's a really kind of one of my favorite sayings amongst radio promos people is they always say, not every hit is a number one and not every one number one is a hit. And, you know, it is weird. And John and I have just it rack our brains all the time thinking about that. Some artists have a bunch of number ones and you can't remember them. And then some people have hardly any number ones, but you remember all of their material. And I don't know why it works that way, but I definitely feel that way for us. And that was why I really particularly missed playing in front of a crowd for a year and a half is for us, like a song like All Night. We felt like that would be a big hit. It did okay. But now that we're out playing it, it's like you would have thought the song was at number one for a month. I mean, people go bananas for it. Now, it was really hard for us to, I think it went to like 20 on the charts or something like that.
25.
That felt like with this rejection. But usually John and I don't pay a whole lot of attention to that because we're seeing it live and we're like, okay, it's working. But now that we are back at it, I'm like, okay, now I get, you know, what we do, why we do what we do, because it works. And it was extremely hard for us in the pandemic to just only be able to look at a chart position.
That was the one, who knows what chart I'm looking at here. I think this was maybe Media Base.
Yeah.
Okay. So All Night was one of the ones that I specifically pulled and was like, this thing was only in the 20s?
Yeah.
Like, here's a clip of All Night. Another one was, and I bet you that it just lights up a live show. It Ain't My Fault.
Yeah.
I got to imagine hands come up and that.
Oh, yeah, every night.
It is. Well, yeah.
I gotta imagine people hit this song as hard as any number one live.
Well, the thing is, our biggest, which does very well, our biggest song on the chart position wise or whatever was Stay a Little Longer. But people come, the majority of the crowd, the song they're waiting to hear is this one. I mean, it ain't my fault.
Yeah, it's the one that they call for the most. You know, Stay a Little Longer, being our only number one, people love that song, but they stay for All Night. They want to hear it, but they stay for that one.
And right now, we're on to our current single, I'm Not For Everyone, and it's charting, we're doing pretty good, but we're like, hello, can we get moving here? Like, this, we're still just like hanging in the 40s, like, what's going on? But now that we're going out and we can play it, and people are already responding like we're playing a hit song, it's like, okay. It's just there's other things at play here more than just a chart position. It's a huge part of what we do, but it's not the only thing. And it can be it can drive. I think even artists that have lots of number ones, if you just look at a chart, it really will just eat you from the inside out. It's really frustrating,
especially from like the 42 to 31 spot. That's kind of like the swampy no man's
land.
Oh
my God, it's
where you're
awful.
Just trying to climb out.
Yeah.
And if you can get out, you got a shot.
And then if you're looking at the chart, especially being in this business now for as long as we have, it's like we know nearly everyone that's on the charts.
When they're jumping
like
over
your
us.
Friend jump you, you're like, oh God, I'm canceling dinner with you.
I think it all comes down to like, what's your own metric, you know? And there are people that live and die by the chart. And that's fine. If that's your metric and that's what you base your success on, that's fine. That's how you want to do it. And it's great. I think for us, we have to base our own success off of multiple metrics. One of them is how well we're doing on radio, but most importantly, like TJ touched on earlier, is how many butts are you putting in seats, and two, how much fun are they having, and how much fun are they having during that song? Can you feel the energy? And we have to go off of that metric. You know, we're very grateful for how we've done on country radio, considering that we do sound different. And it has helped us immensely. But if we only hung our hat on just the chart, we would lose our minds, which is honestly why I don't even look at it. I mean, I don't, because what the hell can I do? I mean, right? I'm not going to call a radio promoter or some guy up and be like, hey, can you give me like 5 spins? That's what our promo team's for. It's just going to drive me crazy. But every time they do play a song, it is a little advertisement for our band.
And there's also this really strange disconnect with radio. And as John said, to me, I think the ultimate just stat is just tickets. You sell tickets.
Yeah.
And there are people like Luke Combs who have lots of number ones, can sell a lot of tickets. And then there's people that like Stapleton, who doesn't have a ton of radio success, but will sell out everywhere he goes. Casey Musgraves, or like even an artist like Eric Church, where he has radio success, but not as much as you would think for someone who sells as many tickets as he does. And that's the thing for me, where I'm like, you know, or you look at Miranda Lambert, you know, a guy will ran on tour with her. I thought, God, he got all these hits. And the same thing for her. She doesn't have a ton of number ones.
But let's mention all the people who have a lot of number ones can't sell seats. That's my fun game.
Let's avoid that.
I'm not saying that. I think we got to go. It's getting a little late. No, but anyhow, but the and that's the kind of also the thing, like the era that we live in is amazing, that I can tell you firsthand that country radio helps sell tickets and helps blow you up. I mean, we'll Stay a Little Longer. When that was a hit, it was night and day what our shows did. But at the same time, there's so many other ways that there's, and it's, in some ways it's exciting, and other ways it's also exhausting, because you're like, now it's like, we got to get songs on these streaming services, and then we got to do things to promote here. And then there's so much to do, so many angles. And if you ignore any one of them, you're really, it's, I don't know if you're, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this that I can say to your fans, something clean. But you're an idiot, basically, if you ignore any of those.
Yeah. Well, I haven't learned the TikTok dance yet to your new song. So if you guys want
to... Yeah, it's not happening.
No, yes,
no.
Oh, okay.
It's not happening.
I guess that's why I haven't learned it. You haven't made it yet.
We should do a TikTok dance where you just sit, stand still. Be like, everyone can do this.
Yeah.
What? So the tour, we're not for everyone.
Yes, we're not for
everybody. Not everybody, everyone. We're not for everyone tour. So did you name... Because it's always, you name a song... And the record, after the song, after the tour. In what order did that happen? And did you name the tour this because you really felt that, or because it was a good song, or?
Well, a couple different reasons. I mean, we titled the record Skeletons because honestly, the song Skeletons on that record defined, I think, the record. It's kind of the centerpiece,
it's one of the
keystone.
First, was it the first one we recorded?
It's one of the first ones we cut.
I know.
And then we recorded I'm Not For Everyone. It was one of the last songs, if not the last song that we recorded. We thought, oh, we got one more day. Let's just do this song. And I'm like, we were thinking, man, I'll sing a verse. That might be kind of cool. It'll just be different. It'll never be a single, but the fans will like it. And then we put the record out, and then people started freaking out about this song in particular. And I think it has a lot to do with the message. I mean, you look at the times that we're in now, and everyone is claiming, you know, who they are, and this is what I do. And also, like, coming to terms with the fact that you just can't please everybody, especially in 2020 and 2021. So we felt the traction of the song, so we decided, you know, we got to put it out. And then us, it is a bit of our mantra. We are accepting that we just are not for everybody. You look at our songs getting to 20 at best for the most part. And then getting to Neil and Travis, who are both a very unique, very awesome left of center artists, it just kind of worked. The whole message seemed to come together at one time. I wish I could say that we were smart enough to see in the future like that, but we're not. And it's just, but we saw how the thing was shaping up and we took advantage of it.
Yeah. And I think it is one of those things that you, that John and I wrote it from the perspective of this is how we feel. And to our surprise, I think nearly everyone feels that way.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote some very personal things in my first book, and I thought, oof, I'm going to share some stuff that's extremely vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it had to do with either the drug addiction my mom had before she died or a lot of the really bad decisions that she made that influenced me.
Mm-hmm.
And that I loved her, but it was a very tough relationship. I mean, heck, she got pregnant when she was 15, right? Mm-hmm. And my dad left.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to... But I was going, there was a lot of stuff. And even when she reached her breaking point, she did some things that I know she wouldn't be proud of, but because drugs had taken control of her.
Yeah.
And so I wrote, and in that I was trying to tell the story of someone who had been through that, not through her side of it, but through mine. And I've never had a drink of alcohol, never touched a drug because I've been so scared of it. I wish I could. I mean, and that to me, the one thing I want to do is relax. I'm freaking wild all the time. So, but I wrote these stories and I thought, man, either people are going to feel sorry for me or they're going to tell me to shut up, but they're not going to understand. And I put it out. And what I learned is, and I say this because you just expressed the same thing to me. What I learned was I never felt so welcomed or like I was included until I felt like I was so not included.
Yeah.
I thought, this is my story. No one's going to understand. Nobody's going to relate. Nobody's going to feel like me.
Yeah.
But it turns out, just because people aren't screaming about it doesn't mean they're not feeling it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when you say we're not for everyone, we do. That's how I felt about me, but I would be doing a meet and greet somewhere. You know, someone would come up, hey, he's like, you know, the story about, you know, that touched me. And I was I
felt that severely when I came out. It was, you know, I thought, I didn't know how it would be received. I knew some people would be supportive and some people would probably hate, but I think the thing that was really one of the most, recharging things of it or whatever or inspiring things to me were the parents and stuff being like, hey, my kid.
Parents of other kids.
Yeah. Are being like, this is great. You know, I was getting a lot of that kind of stuff of just people who themselves weren't gay, but were really close to someone who was. And this felt like just like a relief for them. So I know what you mean. I didn't expect that. And it was one of the coolest experiences I've ever felt.
Did you feel more love? And you just said this, but I just want to hear this from you again, because I did. Did you feel more love than you expected?
I did, and you know, I've talked about this before, but I absolutely felt more love than I expected, and I even feeling the love from people that I knew loved me. It was so different. It was so overwhelming, and it's a thing I wish everyone got to experience because everyone is loved more than they realize they are. And the kind of sad part is a lot of people don't talk about how much they love someone until they've like died or something really tragic. And, you know, it was a difference of just like someone, you know, it's like I compare it to someone just leaves and like, all right, love you, man. See you later. As opposed to like someone grabbing you by the shoulders and being like, I love you. Like, and it just was like, wow, it's the same word, but it just hit in such a different way. That I just thought in that moment, wow, like just for this alone to feel this is it's something I wish everyone could feel at some point in time.
Why at that point in time? Like, did you guys have a conversation of like, let's just do it now? Or you finally like, I just feel like telling people.
Well, yeah. I mean, I always wanted to come out. And this was a huge hurdle for me because I was always really, really afraid that it would look opportunistic. And so I never wanted it to never want it to be anything that would just not here. We need some publicity or whatever. And so in order to do that, I always felt like I need to do this at the height of my career. And then through the pandemic, I'm like, I just really one was kind of the things that were important to me were very simple things that I've had virtually my whole life. Was doing the same, sitting around fire or having some drinks, just, you know, chewing the fat with people. That was, I mean, the things that I was still having the same that were fun for me. And I'm like, I can do this, you know, when I was broke, I was doing these same exact things, you know? So I just felt like at that point, I'm like, and then also, who knows when you're at the height of your career? And so then the other fear was, what if I have to, you never know that you're have passed the height of your career until you're on the way down. And then if I came out then, it just seems like I'd be jumping the shark to people. And so I just felt kind of stuck in this weird thing of like, I'm unsure the perfect time. And then finally, just one day, I just thought like, I got to do this. Like, and I got to do it now. And I don't want to go back to work to where I have distractions again. Like, I need to do this now where I can focus on it. And the other thing too was, I want to be able to build my, why would I not want to get to the height of my career being just completely open about who I am and what I am. And John and I really pride ourselves for just being who we are. I mean, hell, it's where our songs, I'm not for everyone. It's kind of like their mission statement, so to speak. And so at that point I was like, I don't know that there ever is a perfect time, and there really isn't in your brain until you do it. And then you realize that was the perfect time.
You know, what's wild about that day, is that that morning was when the Morgan Wallen stuff happened.
Oh yeah.
And here I go and I wake up 3:30 in the morning and I'm clickety clickety click. And I'm like, the Morgan Wallen stuff. And I'm getting hit by everybody.
Yeah.
Because if somebody wants in this format, and I have to be careful now too, which I never thought would be the case with me, people just want a soundbite out of me.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you have to say about Morgan Wallen? Yeah. What do you have to say about Morgan Wallen?
Yeah,
and I'm like, God dang, man. I don't know. I just saw this. And so I get on the air that morning, and because I don't think your story came out until the literal like 8:30 or 9 o'clock that morning.
Which was also interesting because I hadn't even read the article until it went live for everyone else
to
read
right?
it. So yeah, it was intense. It was an intense moment when that finally went out.
I'm on and I'm like, I got to say something about Morgan Wallen because I'm getting beat up about it. I'm going to say how I feel. And no one had said anything because everybody's just kind of scared. They're all like, I don't want to say the wrong thing either way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I get on and I'm like, all right, guys, here's the deal. He's got to go away for a little bit, fix himself, but he gets to come back.
Yeah.
And that was my message. Like, we don't cancel people. Like, we don't need to cancel people for anything unless you hurt a kid, you hurt an animal, or
you're a really, really bad person.
Right.
Yeah.
I said, we're not going to cancel him, but if you don't think he needs to go away, and at least, like, come on.
Yeah.
I said, and I like Morgan.
Yeah.
And Morgan's been here. He's been over to the house.
He's got a good heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a good heart. He's got stuff.
So I'm dealing with this, and I'm catching it on both sides because I'm the sensible one. I'm not canceling him. So cancel country artists are hitting me up going, I can't believe you. We know the cancel artists are. And the people that are like, no. And I'm just being sensible was so tough because I got both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Then your story comes out. And I mean, I knew you were gay. But for me, it was big. You said it because I was finally, I would get to talk about it. And I went on the air and I mentioned it. And everybody's like, talk about Morgan Wallen. Who cares? and in a way, in both ways, like I felt irritated and great at the same time. Great that people weren't like, we need to hear because somebody's gay.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Because I just did a show called The Talk where they were talking about, you know, somebody being gay. And I was like, wouldn't it be great if somebody was gay? And that was, you don't have to announce it.
No one
it's
cared.
Just part of life. It is what it is.
And I it would be especially great for people who are gay. You know, I would love not to talk about it. And the weirdest thing, I have only verbally come out to anyone at this point. I mean, it was like, I mean, I could maybe count on one hand. People just kind of found out. Like, you know, I was next door neighbors with Amy, and I lived there with my boyfriend in that house. And I'm sure it was not hard to figure out after a certain amount of time that we were together. And so, and then it was kind of this really intense thing because I'm like, well, now I'm about to come out to everyone. And it's just awkward. It's a really awkward thing to do. It's rarely in context with anything that's being discussed amongst your friends. I don't really like to shock people either. You know, it's like, guess what? You know, I don't, that's just not how I am. So I've always felt like, ugh. So in some ways it was kind of a relief to be able to just do it all in one thing. And the other thing that was relieving for me too is that I felt like it was kind of this burden for people that did know, that felt like they didn't want to talk about it, or they could talk about it, or felt weird. Can we talk about it? And I'm like, everyone in the room knows, like, you know, it's fine. I didn't really care all that much, but And I felt like it was a relieving moment for them too, because I felt like it was unfortunately, Mike crossed the bear, so to speak. But I think there was lots of people who were kind of felt the stress of that.
Well, my point was, I would have liked that morning to have spoken about representation, because I think it's so important. Mm. Whether you just want to see somebody that is similar to you doing something great, then you feel like you can do it. Because even me growing up a poverty kid, I didn't see people like me doing cool things.
Right, exactly.
And so I like to be that for them. And I like to. So I wanted to have that conversation. And they were like, that's not for today. Talk about Morgan Wallen. And I was like,
Then I kept hearing people who were like upset that they're like, oh, Morgan Wallen stole your thunder. And I was like, this wasn't about getting attention. You know? So I was like, I truly didn't care. If anything, I thought it was kind of a good moment to see that the variety of what country is going through at this moment. I mean, to have that on one hand and then this on the other is just like, wow, what a time for not only country, but just kind of cultural things happening. And I think for me, it was just speaking about from my own experience in doing that, is I think a lot of people just really think that, with country fans and country artists, that we're just all these like really narrow-minded, Neanderthals or whatever they think. I'm not really sure. And then to kind of really be part of this group of people that I think is incredibly diverse, more than people realize. And it's only really recently really becoming that way. But I think there's a lot of country fans out there who have never really been able to have to really be acknowledged that much too. And that we've noticed that people, I mean, you see it really, especially with like Kane out there and Mickey or Jimmy Allen, these people that now all these people of color are having success. We see it at our shows, people of color, more people of color showing up. Before they loved it all along. They just felt uncomfortable. They didn't feel like they belonged in the community, but they do.
If you get a cold, does your voice get deeper?
I don't have a cold, if that's what you're wondering.
No, yes. I don't think you do now.
It does,
because if you did, I would be like, COVID.
Yeah, it does,
It does get deeper? How?
I don't know.
You ever do voiceover? Did you ever try to do voiceover stuff?
I just recently kind of started talking about it, and then about just doing it just mainly for fun. I mean, I can't imagine there's a ton of money in it, but but recently someone told me that like pretty much every person in entertainment has been trying to do voiceovers now because there's been so little work.
Do it all from home.
That I'm like, they're like, no, we don't need more. Just sing, please.
Well, let's not let it be lost on. This is like, I would say this is the Lady A effect, where Charles Kelly is 10 feet tall. So you don't realize Dave Haywood's like 6'2 or 6'3.
Yeah, Dave's actually a tall cat.
Say that about you, because John, you have a deep freaking voice too, but you're just not quite where he is.
Not quite down there. I mean, he had a lower voice than me when we were kids. I mean, I was in puberty and his voice was lower than mine. He hadn't even hit puberty yet and was like, what are you doing here? He had an Adam's apple at 5. Like, what the hell is going on?
I did one time. I got in trouble at school for some like silly thing. I was just kind of a class clown, and then I was able to get home in time to intercept the phone call, and they thought they were speaking to my dad. And I was like, "Hello, I'm like, your son today." And I'm like, "Well, I'll deal with it."
Tell me, John, about when you play. Is there something that you do see? Because you're so proficient, and I ask. This is, and I don't mean to be insulting, because sometimes people will say, hey, man, you're pretty talented. And I get insulted by that because I'm not talented. I work hard.
Yes. Well, you have to have both. Yeah, you have to have.
I agree.
Talent's nothing without working hard.
So I ask in the way of, naturally, did you have a gift that you felt early? Are you able to interpret playing or sounds, sonic, anything different than people you even play with? Like, what is it about you that makes it special?
Well, I don't want to say that I'm special in any regard.
I said it, not you.
Yeah, it's special. Or it, because it is kind of binary when it is it and you. But honestly, it's a couple things. Like, I picked up on guitar pretty quickly. But on top of it, like, I loved playing and I loved the process. And I remember watching a video with John Mayer a couple years ago, and I wish I had thought of this a long time ago. And he was saying what makes people great is they have to love the process of getting there. And there are a lot of people that have natural ability, but they don't like the process of working at it. And I think more important than natural ability is working hard at it, because you can have someone with just a little bit of talent and they can work their ass off, and then they will get there eventually. And I've seen just the most natural musicians. I used to teach guitar when I was in high school, And some of these kids could pick it up so fast, but then they just wouldn't work hard at it. So I genuinely loved learning. I love reading. I love knowledge. I just soak it all in. And it gets to a point, and I don't want to get too metaphysical with anything, but there's something called flow, and we all get in it. You know, like you have some nights, I'm sure you know this when you're doing stand-up, you have some nights where you're like, okay, I'm battling this one out. I got through it. And the other nights, it's like you're surfing on a wave and you just can't fall. And this is getting kind of heady, but there used to be the term genius was referred to something that was like metaphysical that lived above us. And we didn't actually have talent. We were a conduit for talent. But I think there is something to it, whereas you work really, 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 really hard, then your brain shuts off, and then you just do it. Like your brain is not even, it's just, I don't want to say autopilot because it sounds bad, but it seems like something else is flowing through you, and you just happen to be the vessel for it. And, you know, that's, I believe you look at players like, I mean, look at Keith when he's in the zone, that's like, he's not even, he leaves his body. Go look, I mean, pretty much any performance of Jimi Hendrix or Stevie Ray Vaughan, those guys have left their body and like something else is taking over. But that only comes with putting in your 10,000 hours and putting that 10,000 hours in over and over and over and over again to the point where your brain just shuts off and it just happens.
That was going to be my question. Like, do you get to flow if you didn't put the work in? Like, is the flow a product of hours?
I think you can to a degree. Like, you know, I mean, it's like, I would say for me, like, there are certain days, like, I wouldn't consider myself to be labeled as funny. I occasionally say funny things, but I don't think I'm a funny guy. But there will occasionally be a day where I am just like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm just getting all of these, like, really hilarious things are coming to me, and I'm saying, everyone's laughing. And then I might try it the next day, and everyone's like, will you shut up? You're not funny at all. But I just had that flow that day.
Yeah.
I was feeling funny. There was something going on. But, you know, and I do think that it is like the same thing. Like, there is an innate, like, just talent you would have. Like, me having a low voice, for instance, I didn't practice that. I just have it. And, you know, there is an ability of, like, for me, it was like, well, I can't sing like a lot of really and crazy good singers, like, you know, whoever comes to mind, Bruno Mars or whoever. But I had to really learn of, like, how to make a single note, like a whole note, really feel like I was singing 20 notes or whatever. And that's something, yeah, it takes a lot of time. But the reason why you're able to work on it, in this instance with John playing guitar, is that he just really, really liked it more than the average person. Most people don't listen to it. They don't want to figure it out. It's like, I can go out and, like, try to build a house and just get a bunch of nails and start hammering things together. But until you work at how to actually frame a house out or how to cut this board properly, is all the difference.
Yeah, I actually loved practicing. So going back to what we were talking about earlier, I had a scholarship at Belmont to play upright bass and all that stuff. Yeah, and play the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. But I never really liked practicing. I did it because I had to. And I enjoyed the playing side of it, but I just didn't want to sit down and do it. But guitar, no one ever had to tell me to do it. I couldn't get it out of my hands. And
no,
I would
in fact,
sit,
there would be times where I'd be like, oh my God. Like, we would go to bed and I'd be like, he'd still be playing guitar. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like, we got to be up in like 6 hours. Like, shut up.
And I don't know why.
He would be like, all right. And then he would be like, okay, well, let me play something that
lullabies.
Because we shared a bedroom growing up and we grew up in a really, you know, humble means. And so he would, he would then just play like something chill to fall asleep to.
So what were you, and not a therapist here, but what were you chasing by trying to get so good at the guitar?
I don't know. I mean, there is a bit of an addictive quality to it. You know, if you wanted to go into the biological side of it, it was probably serotonin and dopamine hits, just like anybody that's addicted to anything. I just couldn't. No one ever told me to do it. It wasn't even a choice. I never sat down and said, I'm going to choose to want to do this. I just wanted to do it.
I think that's that way for most. That's why I find it so hilarious when someone's like, I'm retiring from music.
Yeah.
So like literally you're never in your life going to sing or anything ever again.
But honestly, a big part of it for me too, a big side of it was in school, I was like by far the farthest thing from the cool kid. Very quiet, very shy, very sensitive. Picked on by the bullies and all the cool kids. And the guitar for me was like, okay, this is my place. I feel invincible here.
Like your safe place.
Safe place. And I felt like it became my identity. And maybe I was chasing that. I don't really know 100%. But I just absolutely loved it. And I'd be in school and I'd be like hiding from my own shadow. And
it is,
then
it is therapeutic. You know, like her oldest sister, Rachel, who, you know, God bless her. She's a wonderful person, but was not blessed. If you are blessed with music, she certainly was not. And she would admit that. And so she always said, she's like, anytime you guys are arguing or a moment gets awkward, she's like, you guys whistle. You'll be like, we like whatever. And we just instantly kind of get lost in music. And I think there's something there, which is also writing songs, those types of things. It is it is a form of therapy.
But I was also very much a kind of a quiet kind of, I loved solitude. And, you know, I could go to my room, and fortunately, I don't know what I would be as a teenager now. There's way too, where they're subjected to, you know, TikTok and all these, being an Instagram influencer, and then all these video games, which we had video games as a kid, but they're nothing like they are now. I mean, it was just like, I don't know, you played it and whatever. So I was addicted to guitar. And if I ever felt, and I've struggled with anxiety, I have had anxiety my whole life, and I've done a lot of work around it. But guitar for me was my medicine. So if I would ever feel nervous or anxious or any type of verging on depression, guitar would always bring me back to center. And that's I think has a lot to do with it as well.
You know, I ask, you know, what were you chasing? And I mean, because I think for me, I know what I was chasing when I was a kid, and I was trying to perform at anything. If it was radio, I was getting on stage, it was, I didn't have love at home, so I was trying to get it somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But affirmation of some sort.
As I'm, you know, I'm engaged, and we, you know, we're going to get married soon and all. And she has to slap me in the head sometimes and go, hey, you know what? You don't have to like chase that sometimes.
Mm, yeah.
Like, you're loved.
That's good.
I know.
That's good.
And it's the first person to ever do that to me, and I actually understand what they mean.
Yes.
But I've never heard that's another thing. You could actually be chasing that serotonin, that in
that,
your brain.
That dopamine hit. That absolutely.
That for me is wild to think about.
Yeah.
I know why I did it, right?
Yeah.
I know why I'm still doing it, honestly.
Know.
You know, some of that childhood trauma stuff, you just don't shake.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You cope better.
And one of the hardest things, and it's amazing that you have such a strong woman that kind of shakes you and rattles you out of that, because what is enough? You know, what is enough success? You know, it's like, I was talking about with some of these artists, some of the biggest artists in the world, they don't need the money anymore. I mean, there's something else here that, that they can't shake. There's, you know, I'll get a Grammy, and you get one. It's like, well, how many can I get? I want to have the most. I want to have the biggest tour. I want to sell the most tickets. I want to sell the most records. And it's hard not to get caught up in that. You know, I think, everyone, it starts to feel very much like a competition than like a celebration at any point in time, especially like radio. I mean, it's all ratings and where you place and who beat you.
Judgment.
You don't look at stuff anymore.
Judgment.
Yeah, it's like crazy, but it gets, I mean, and the reason why you don't look at it, because if you did, it would drive you crazy.
I'll absolutely bonkers.
Same.
Me too.
That's why we don't look at the chart. Yeah. I mean, it does drive you crazy.
So at the end of 2019, I had a pretty epic meltdown, just like very, it was really, really bad. And, you know, I ended up, my anxiety was at like this crazy high, and I've always kind of dealt with it one way or the other. And I've never really, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've liked to party and I like to do things to assist me in partying, but I've never struggled with it. Like, I never wake up going, man, I need a drink. Like, I've never struggled with addiction in that way, but I have struggled with workaholism. You probably struggle with this too. I've always felt like, okay, if it's getting weird, I'll just work harder, and then that'll solve my problems, because it has done that for years. And really, I'm just distracting myself from the inevitable monster that is about to envelop me. And it did. In the end of 2019, I went to this place called On Site for 3 weeks. It was a full-on thing. You know, it was bad. I got to the point where it was suicidal, and I ended up with tinnitus ringing in my ears, brought on by a lot of other different things. I wasn't sleeping. It got really, really ugly. And it occurred to me at some point that when I was a kid, I would play guitar when I would feel that way. You know, I would play guitar. It would take me out of that. You know, if I was in school and I was anxious, I would go and play guitar. If I was at home and it was tumultuous at the home with, like, you know, our parents fighting, I would go in the room and I'll play guitar, and it would always make me feel better. And then I pursued a career in music. I'm like, this is fun, and this is great, and I get to do it all the time. Meanwhile, I'm not really taking care of my inner child, which is really what it all boils down to. I'm just ignoring it, and I'm making myself feel better, you know. And of course, I had moments of like, I'll just drink my way through it and smoke weed my way through it or whatever I had to do. And then it got to the point where, all right, we made it. We're successful. We're Grammy nominated. We're winning awards. We're buying houses. This is really amazing. Hell,
at the time when this is happening, we're on tour with like this dream lineup with Alison Krauss, Bonnie Raitt, and Willie Nelson.
Our three favorite artists, period, of all time, top three. And I had a meltdown. And I couldn't do it anymore. I broke down.
But I pulled out of the tour, which was like Farm Aid. I mean, all these like really huge, this like huge moment.
And I think two things I realized happened. One, I realized that now the very thing that brought me out of anxiety was now was now giving me anxiety, the reason for it. Because, you know, if I felt judgment, I'd play guitar. If I felt anxious, I would play guitar. If I felt picked on or whatever, I'd play guitar. Now this thing is like, you're judged a lot, you know, which again, we don't look at the charts. I try to ignore a lot of that stuff, but it is a lot of judgment that you get every day. And it's like, you'll sign on to Twitter and you're like, whoa, man, you guys are pissed off about things and we didn't even do anything and you're mad at us. So it became a lot. So then I had nothing to fall back on. I didn't even want to play guitar. It was awful. And the other thing I realized when I was there, and through a lot of therapy that I've done since then, is this is not an uncommon situation to be in. You know, a person growing up and having, you know, trauma, and we all have trauma. No one is
gets a hall pass.
Yeah, no one gets a hall pass. We all have trauma, big trauma, small trauma. You have it, and you have to deal with it at some point. And it is so not unusual for someone like myself or really any of us to pursue a goal, because we have this false notion that once we get it, everything will be better. And then the problem is, and this happens all the time, and you see it happen all the time with movie stars, with musicians, just big, you know, anyone that finally succeeds in their dream, once they got it, they realized, oh no, that actually didn't do it. And I've like spent 20 years trying to figure that out. Now what? And when you realize that, you look behind you and that giant monster is huge because you never dealt with it. And a lot of times that's why people end up with bad drug addictions and alcohol addictions and in rehab and stuff like that, because they never dealt with their problem to begin with. So fortunately, through the love of my family and my wife and friends and the people that we work with, our management was amazing. The label was amazing. Jay Joyce, our producer, was amazing. They're like, stop everything. We're done for a month. Go take care of yourself. And I did that. I'm so glad that I made it through, because not everyone does.
It's crazy. You talk about being a workaholic, and we're almost done here. But like I experienced that, right? Like I hide from things, or did, still do. Getting a little better because I have a good support system now. Still do. But I went to OnSite too because I was like, uh-oh.
It gets you.
They're like, whatever's about to happen ain't supposed to be about to happen.
It gets you.
It's like
right.
You start to crack.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to catch the cracks before they turned into just full-scale earthquakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I have empathy for you. I have sympathy for anyone that's going through anything, but I have empathy because I understand.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what we talked about. What comes back around full circle. We'll end on this. That so many people understand, but because people ain't talking about it, because it's not on social media, because it's not on Facebook, everybody thinks they're alone.
That is it right there. And I've told so many people this. The problem that we face in this world, and I think it's a bit of an epidemic, is that everyone, we're all so connected, yet we all feel so alone, because you post all of your highlights on social media. That's not who you are. That's not who you really are. That's why when you wrote those things in your book, it made people feel vulnerability is everything. That's where connection happens. Yeah, I don't go, hi, I'm John Osborne, I've won all these awards and blah, 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 blah. No one cares. But if I said, hi, I'm John Osborne, I struggle with really bad depression and anxiety, immediately vulnerability creates connection. And talking about it, it's counterintuitive. Yeah. Talking about it keeps you from being alone.
But you're right, Bobby. Is when John was going through a lot of this stuff, you know, people were coming up like, man, you know, my son went through this. We're going through this. And people that I was really close to, and I had no idea that they were dealing with extreme problems, and no one was talking about it. And I kind of felt like, wow, you know, and I thought, well, part of why John is in the condition he's in is that he felt so alone and that he couldn't complain about it because maybe he felt it was a weakness, or he didn't want to feel like he was letting anyone down and that he needed to man up and get it together, when there was tons of people around you at any given day that are going through some really, really severe things. And that really was eye-opening to me. I was like, wow, I just wish people talked about it more.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Well, listen, you know I adore both of you guys.
Likewise, man.
I mean, I couldn't, on a fundamental level, respect and just love you guys.
Likewise, dude. And
for somebody I don't hang out with, like, I love you.
Yeah, likewise,
I don't hang out
Bobby.
With anybody, really. I got, like, two people to hang out with.
You don't have time to hang out
with
anybody.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying. I don't.
Yeah, exactly. You got to go to bed in, like, 2 hours.
So, but I do, and I sincerely mean it. And I don't tell a lot of people that because I don't mean it. But
yeah,
I
feel
that
man.
From you.
I hope you guys know that it is as legitimate from me as it possibly could be.
Thank you. We know that. Thank you.
And if you called and you said, hey, I need to be picked up. I'm down in Madison, broken down. I would come and pick you up.
Well, we know that. We absolutely know that. Yeah. And it makes me feel good to know that you are also privy to your own, you know, trials that we all deal with, and that you have your soon-to-be wife, who's there just to slap you across the head and remind you, hey, man.
Sometimes it sucks.
I know. But it is the best medicine you'll ever get.
Like I'm 41 now, right? I've never been engaged, never even been close to being engaged, never been married, and it's the first I've never lived with anyone. And so it's like now she will just go no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, I don't understand that. Yeah. What
the
do you
power
mean?
Power of no.
What do you mean? I know. I just want to go spend 6 hours playing golf with my friends, and she's like, No, we have two dogs. We've got groceries to go get. It's not responsible. No, I don't got.
Yeah.
And it's that the real life stuff. But then it's also the I will spiral. And she's like, and we'll end on this. This is because we're sharing here.
Can I also ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is when those times where she's like, no, you're not going to go out and do that, and then you stay home, are you like, wow, this is actually kind of nice?
Yeah, in the end, I'm like, she's right. But yeah, I don't say that out loud to her. Yeah. I'm like, ah. my TV show that is on Nat Geo, and it's doing really well.
I haven't watched the show yet, but just the reels I see you post of it.
Hilarious.
I'm like, once we're finished with this, so we don't keep going, I want to ask you about the barges, because he and I live on the river, and we see the barges all the time. Yeah. I've got like a million questions. But go
ahead. So we do this show, and I'm like, I'd been waiting to do my own. I created this show myself, and it's kind of like part Jackass, part Dirty Jobs, part what I do on the radio show. But I combined all these elements, things I love, and made this show about people with adversity. And I'm like, I just want to get it on the air. Nat Geo buys it. I'm like, all right. Oh, it's got to have huge ratings. Week one comes out, huge ratings. I'm going crazy. Every week I'm going crazier about something else. It gets on Disney Plus. It's on Disney Plus. It's on their front screen. And I'm like, if I'm on the front screen and it's not one of their biggest shows, they're not going to want it anymore. And she will grab me and say, you are spiraling.
Yeah.
Like, you have to. And I listen.
Yeah.
And I don't listen to anybody.
That's amazing you have that.
Yeah. It's the blind spot, right? We all have a blind spot, and you have to have someone there to tell you what's in that blind spot. And she's doing that.
She lives there.
That's poor thing.
Yes. Okay, listen, you guys, Brothers Osborne going to be out. We're Not For Everyone. The tour dates, July 29th through November 20th. They're out. You're out all the time. I've never seen so many dates in one like.
We're making
season.
Up for lost time, man.
Apparently. Yeah. They're doing four shows in Boston in 1 hour, apparently. No, you guys check it out. As you can see, I love the guys. Follow them at Brothers Osborne. Very funny on social media. Appreciate you guys' time.
Love you,
appreciate
Bobby.
You,
thank
Bobby.
You, buddy.
We did an hour. We did over an hour. That's sometimes things go 15 minutes, and I'm like, well, that was good, folks. But just appreciate you guys, and I'll see you soon.
Likewise, buddy.
Take care.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.